Thank you, Mr. Warren. Well, greetings, brethren. I trust you're all having a wonderful Sabbath day. It may be cooler outside and quite a bit moist than what we're used to, but I did look ahead, and Tuesday's forecast is saying mid-60s, bright sunshine. So we'll have a little break in the weather. Monday's supposed to be sunshiny too, but it's not supposed to be quite that warm, so we're okay. Brethren, I'd like to focus in on a story today that we find back in the book of Genesis. It's the story of the Tower of Babel. So if you'll begin there with me, turn to Genesis chapter 11. We're going to read this. I'm going to read it from the Amplified Bible. But it's a very interesting story, and it shows an attitude that we all have to avoid in our lives. Genesis chapter 11 and verse 1. Now the whole earth spoke one language and used the same words or vocabulary. I went back to Adam Clark's commentary, and he said the whole earth was of one language. The whole earth, all of mankind, used one language. In all likelihood, it was Hebrew. And I didn't realize this at the time when I started this, but Hebrew was the language that the whole earth used at that particular point in time. And of one speech, they were articulating the same words in the same way. It is generally supposed that after the confusion mentioned in this chapter, the Hebrew language remained in the family of Heber. The proper names and their significance was given in the scripture seem incontestable evidence that the Hebrew language was the original language of the earth. It was the language that God spoke to man, in which he gave them the revelation of his will. It was the language he used with Moses and the prophets. It was used in all the world for 1,757 years. Now, let's pick the story back up in verse 2 of Genesis 11. And as the people journeyed eastward, they found a plain in the land of Sinar, and they settled there. They said to one another, "Come, let us make bricks and fire them thoroughly in the kiln to harden and to strengthen them." So they used the bricks for stone as a building material, and they used tar or asphalt for mortar. They said, "Come, let us build a city for ourselves." You notice a lot of us's in this, and there's not room for God in what they're talking about. It says, "Come, let us build a city for ourselves and a tower whose top will reach the heavens. Let us make a famous name for ourselves so that we will not be scattered into separate groups and dispersed over the entire surface of the earth." But what did God instruct them to do? If you go back to Genesis chapter 9 in verse 1, what did he tell Noah and his sons? Genesis chapter 9 and verse 1. So the Lord blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth." That was the instruction that man was given. But they're not following that, are they? Let's go back to 11. We'll pick the story back up in verse 5. Now the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of man had built. And the Lord said, "Behold, they are one unified people, and they have the same language. This is only the beginning of what they will do in rebellion against me." And again, I'm still in the Amplified version. "Now no evil thing that they imagine they can do will be impossible for them." So God's saying, you know what? We're going to have to do something about this. So he said, "Come, let us go down there and confuse and mix up the language so that they do not understand one another's speech." I went back to Adam Clark's commentary, and some of the things that he pointed out in this He said they would be working on the tower, and someone would call for a plank, or they'd call for mortar. And what they would get, the first would get a stone instead of a plank. The second would get an axe instead of the mortar that he needed. One would have spikes, and by him, a spade was given to him. So he would need spikes to do his work, but he was given a spade. Another asks for a saw and gets a sheave. Thus, crossly crossed, they prat and point in vain. They couldn't understand at all what they were supposed to do. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there all over the surface of the entire earth, which is what he had instructed them to do in the first place. And they stopped building the city. Therefore, the name of the city was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language and the language of the entire earth. And from that place, the Lord scattered and dispersed them over the surface of all the earth. Brethren, God had to put a barrier between the people because they committed their hand to do sin. As God said in verse 6, "Behold, they are one unified people, and they have all the same language. This is only the beginning of what they will do in rebellion against me. And now no evil thing that they can imagine will be impossible for them." The language barrier has long kept groups apart. I had a personal experience with a language barrier at one time. One year for the feast, a group of five of us got together, and we decided that we were going to take a trip to Germany for the feast. So we flew over to England, took the train down to Dover, and those cliffs are really white, by the way, and then took the jet fuel over to Ostend, Belgium, and rented a van. And as we were making our way towards the feast, we thought it would be neat to go to Germany to the original Oktoberfest. We're like, okay, this is great. So we were driving. Actually, I was the one driving. It was about midnight. Of course, all the signs were in German. There was not one English word on anything. So I'm driving along at midnight. Everybody else in the van's asleep. And I seen an error to get over into one lane. So I understood that part. But the little building that was off to the side there, I had no idea what that was. Nor did I stop, because I didn't know I was supposed to. But I soon found out that that was the wrong thing to do, because what I had actually done without realizing it, I drove from the border of Belgium into Germany, and we were supposed to stop and show our passports. Looked like an outhouse to me. I was like, I'm going on. Well, about 25 yards beyond the building, after five guards come out with guns, I realized maybe I should stop. So this guy is out there and he's yelling something in German and I have no idea what he's saying. He was actually going like this for me to come back. But from what I saw in my rearview mirror, it looked like he was saying like this. So I hit the gas pedal. Oh boy, did that cause a stir. Well, everybody in the van by that time was awake because these guys were yelling to the top of their voice. And they're like, "What's going on? What's going on?" I said, "I have no idea." And they said, "Go back, go back." So I backed up to this little shack. And it's a good thing I didn't speak German, because I have no idea what that guy said to me. But for literally 5 to 10 minutes, I sat there and got screamed at in my face, up one side and down the other. Still don't have a clue what the guy said. He did make some kind of a gesture like this, so I took that for what it meant, that he probably thought I was crazy for what I just did. And then he's asking for things, and none of us spoke German, so we didn't know what he was asking for. And finally he realized we had no clue what he was saying, and he said, "Passports!" So he took all of our passports and he went in the shack. 30 minutes go by, and we're like, "Okay, what's going on now?" So he comes back out and he hands me the passport, has a few more choice words for me in German. At this point, I'm not moving, because until he tells me to go, I'm planted right there. Well, he looked at me and he looked very confused. And finally, he did the hand motion to go on. So I said, okay, I'm going. If anybody starts getting shot at, we're hitting the ditch. But anyway, so that was my experience with a language barrier. So I can have somewhat of a comprehension of what these people were going through. I mean, can you imagine you'd grown up with these people all your life, you all spoke the same language, and then all of a sudden, you can't understand what this one's saying, you can't understand what that one's saying, nobody understands anything. So that's what God had to do, though. He said, for thousands of years, people of the same language have stayed in various areas of the planet. God knew that as his people worked together on projects, they would be able to move things ahead of his time frame. And God didn't want that to happen. So he had to intervene to slow things down. Look around today. That barrier that God put in place many hundreds of years ago is all but gone. In today's fast-moving world, things aren't a barrier. Language isn't that much of a barrier anymore. Working without the language barrier means knowledge is increasing so rapidly that it'll almost make your head spin. You know, they come out with a new cell phone, think, okay, I got the latest one. 3 months later, they come out with another one. 3 to 4 months later, they come out with another one. And it's supposed to be so much more advanced, so they want you to try and get that one. You know, it's mind-blowing how fast technology does increase. But if we go to the book of Ecclesiastes, let's look at something Solomon had to say here. Chapter 1 and verse 18. Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 18. Again, I'm going to read mine from the Amplified Bible. For in much human wisdom, there is much displeasure and exasperation. Increasing knowledge increases sorrow. Notice, in much human wisdom, there's much displeasure. Technology does not make us happier, as everybody wants us to believe. The happiness that everybody's seeking, the happiness that everybody's missing, is God in our lives. Remember, Mr. Armstrong years ago told us that there's a spirit in man, and by itself, our spirit is only half there. It needs the Spirit of God to bond with it, to grow with it, to make you into a complete person. And if you ask my wife, she might say I'm only half there now, but that's another story. No, she wouldn't say that. We need the Spirit of God to be a complete and whole person. Remember what Peter tells us in 2 Peter 3, verse 18. Second Peter 3 and verse 18. And I'm still in the Amplified Bible, by the way. But grow spiritually mature in the grace and knowledge of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. To him be glory, honor, majesty, and splendor, both now and to the day of eternity. So, in looking at this, I found a story that was quite disturbing, but I wanted to share it with you. And the title of this story is Sketchy Genetic Engineering Practices Could Spell the End of the World as We Know It. And the author goes on to talk about that last century, the world was upended when science breached the inner sanctum of an atom and created the A-bomb. Today, we are hacking into the inner sanctum of living cells. The consequences, for better or worse, spell the end of life as we know it. Today's drama began several years ago when genetic engineers from Harvard, MIT, and UC Berkeley co-developed powerful gene editing tools that now make it possible for us to directly monkey with the DNA in our systems at will. The tool has become known as CRISP, which stands for Clustered Regulatory Interspaced Short Pentatomical Repeats. In plain English, CRISP is making possible scenarios once considered nothing but science fiction. There are unprecedented developments ranging from utopia to dystopia. First, the good. Using these tools to treat genetic diseases, of which there are thousands, everything from cystic fibrosis, breast cancer, diabetes, autism, and even obesity. Parents who have muscular dystrophy children, for instance, it has a defective gene that fails to produce enough of an enzyme that's a key protein in order for your body to function properly. But recently, get this, this one struck home to me. Doctors at Nationwide Children's Hospital, no less in Columbus, Ohio, injected healthy genes into four DMD boys and obtained very encouraging results. Now, the sketchy part. Using these gene editing tools to mix and match desperate species, please note, this is not selective breeding process. As I write this, renegade genetic engineers in California and Minnesota are creating pig, human, and sheep human chromosomes whose vital organs are human. They are doing it against the wishes of and without any funding from the National Institutes of Health. But they're reportedly motivated by a noble cause. And their cause is to create a limitless source of body parts for patients in need of them. But what if the human cells and these illicit chromosomes proliferate beyond the vital organs, to the brain, for instance? The resulting creatures possibly capable of human thought. Now we know, brethren, that there is a spirit in man that comes from God. So this part, they just don't have the knowledge of God to be able to understand this. But they're saying that they could then have something that can no longer be considered just a pig. Said, we are not near the island of Dr. Maru, but science moves fast. A gentleman from the National Institute of Health stated, the spectrum of intelligent mouse stuck in a laboratory somewhere screaming, I want to get out, would be troubling to people. A Stanford University biologist who is trying to make human sheep chromosomes concedes such a thing could actually happen. If the extent of human cells that's injected into these animals is 0.5%, it's very unlikely that anything that we get into thinking pigs or standing sheep, he says. But if it's large, like 40%, we don't know what we're going to end up with. Finally, the unnerving use is to create novel organisms from scratch. We're going from reading our genetic code to the ability to write it, declares one renowned genealogist. This gives us the ability to do things that we've never contemplated before. To that end, geneticists recently launched a global initiative that intends to redesign existing genomes, living organisms sprung entirely from the human imagination. Sounds like science fiction. The author of the article says, I love science and trust in its motivating desire to understand the universe and to improve the human condition. But if we've learned anything from the hacking of the atom, it's the sketchy and unnerving consequences, such as nuclear power plants and H-bombs, sparsely overshadowing the good ones, which is nuclear medical devices, and treatments of cancer and that routinely save lives. It says, witness our current nail-biting effects to keep nukes out of the hands of North Korea and Iran. He said, although I foresee a great deal coming from this genetic engineering, I'm inclined to commence with the thought that says we have crossed a line and a barrier that should have never been crossed. You know, this seems mind-blowing, to say the least, but it puts a whole new meaning on God's words that he spoke back in Genesis 11 and verse 6. I'm going to read that again. You don't have to turn there. And God said, behold, they are one unified people. They have the same language, and this is only the beginning of what they will do in rebellion against me. Now no evil thing that they imagine will be impossible for them. Man, apart from God, is trying to play God. To come up with a way to bypass our organs as they wear out and to replace them like spare parts from an auto store. A few years ago, a movie came out called The Island. I don't know if any of you have seen it or not, but it was really a movie along these exact lines. They would take people who were well off and well educated, and they'd take cells from them, and they would actually generate another one of them. And they grew them in an underground city. And they kept very close tabs on their health. And then as these people who paid for this would get sick or get in an accident or something, they would tell these people, hey, you get to go to the island. The island is beautiful. The island's great. The island's a place you want to go to. And they created all this enthusiasm among the contestants, is what they, how they had it set up. And they would tell them, look, here's the bottom line. When your name's called, you get to go to Utopia. You've hit the jackpot. You've won the lottery. But in essence, what they were doing was taking them from there to a surgery room and removing the parts that they needed for the person who was sick or in an accident to replace them so they could continue their life. And then they would start over. They would get cells from them again and start over with a new one so they could keep on going for a long time. Let's see what God tells us about man's time. Let's go to the book of Psalms. Chapter 90. And we'll read in verse 10. The days of our lives are 70 years, and if by some reason of strength they may be 80, yet their boast is only labor and sorrow, for it will soon be cut off, and we will fly away. So what David is saying here is, look, God now has set it up to where man has been given 70 years. There are examples, and we have in our own congregation members who have surpassed that time frame. Some by quite a few years, which is wonderful. But that's a blessing from God that happens. Man is trying every way he can to prolong his physical life. The problem is his whole focus is on the physical and not developing the spiritual that we saw back in 2 Peter. Brethren, we need to put our focus on our spiritual house. Yes, we need to take care of ourselves to the best of our ability, but we also need to focus on developing the mind of Christ within us. Let's go to Philippians chapter 2. Philippians Philippians 2 and verse 5. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. That's what we're to be striving for. We're to be developing that mind of Christ in ourselves, developing our spiritual nature to where we think and act as He would. God has given us many examples throughout His Word and instruction book to show what happens when we take our focus off of Him. We tend to think way too much of ourselves and of our own understanding and leave God out of the picture. That's a big reason why He had to shorten the lifespan of man. He started out, man would live several hundred years. Then, around the time of Moses, He took it down to 120 years. Now, it's down to 70. Anything above that, as we noted in Psalms, is just a blessing. Let's look at another example of someone who thought too much of themselves. Let's go to Daniel chapter 4. And we're going to spend quite a bit of time in Daniel. Daniel chapter 4. And we're going to start reading in verse 4. Nebuchadnezzar had had another dream. It wasn't the first one he'd had, but this one troubled him greatly. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in my house and flourishing in my palace. I saw a dream which made me afraid, and the thoughts on my bed and the visions of my head troubled me. Therefore I issued a decree to bring all the wise men in of Babylon before me, that they might make known to me the interpretation of my dream. Then the magicians, the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers came in, and I told them the dream, but they could not make known to me its interpretation. But at last Daniel came before me, whose name was Belshazzar, according to the name of my God. In him is the spirit of the holy God. And I told the dream before him, saying, Belshazzar, chief of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy God is in you, and no secret troubles you, explain to me the visions of my dream that I have seen and its interpretation. Then he goes on and he says, these are the visions that were in my head while I was on my bed. I was looking, and behold, a tree in the midst of the earth, and in its height was great. The tree grew and became strong. Its height reached into the heavens, and it could be seen to the ends of all the earth. Its leaves were lovely. Its fruit was abundant, and in it was food for all. The beasts of the field found shade under it. The birds of heaven dwelt in its branches, and all flesh was fed from it. And I saw the vision on my bed, or on my head, while I was in my bed. And there was a watcher, a holy one, coming down from heaven. And he cried aloud and said thus, chop down the tree, cut off its branches, strip its leaves, and scatter its fruit. Let the beasts get out from under it, and the birds from its branches. Nonetheless, leave the stump and the roots in the earth, bound with a band of iron and bronze. In the tender grass of the field, let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let him graze with the beast on the grass of the earth. Let his heart be cleansed from that of a man. Let him be given the heart of a beast, and let 7 times pass over him. This decision is by the decree of the watcher, and the sentence by the word of the holy ones, in order that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, and he gives it to whomever he will, and he sets over it the lowest of men. This is the dream I, Nebuchadnezzar, have seen. Now you, Belteshazzar, declare its interpretation, since all the wise men of my kingdom are not able to make known to me the interpretation, but you are able, for the spirit of the holy God is in you. So Nebuchadnezzar knew, because of past experiences with Daniel, that God was in him, and he knew that God could make the interpretation of this dream to him. Then Daniel said, whose name was Belteshazzar, was astonished for a time. He didn't really want to tell him what it meant. And his thoughts troubled him. So the king spoke and said, "Do not let the dream or its interpretation trouble you." Belteshazzar answered and said, "My lord, may the dream concern those who hate you, and its interpretation concern your enemies. The tree that you saw, which grew and became strong, whose height reached the heavens, and which could be seen by all the earth, whose leaves were lovely and its fruit abundant, in which was food for all, under which the beasts of the field dwelt, and in whose branches the birds of heaven had their home. It is you, O king, who have grown and become strong, for your greatness has grown and reaches to the heavens, and your dominion to the end of the earth. And insomuch as the king saw a watcher, a holy one, coming down from heaven and saying, 'Chop down the tree and destroy it, but leave its stump and its roots, bound with a band of iron and bronze. In the tender grass of the field, let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let him graze with the beasts of the field till seven times pass over.' This is the interpretation." Now, can you imagine being in Daniel's shoes? Here he just told the king what he didn't really want to tell him, but he had to tell him because it was the truth. "O king, this is the decree, the Most High, which has come upon you, my lord, the king. They shall drive you from among men. Your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make you eat grass like oxen. They shall wet you with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over you, till you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, and he gives it to whom he chooses. And insomuch that they gave the command to leave the stump and the roots of the tree, your kingdom shall be assured for you, after you come to know that heaven rules. Therefore, O king, let my advice be acceptable to you, and break off your sins by being righteous, and your iniquities by showing mercy to the poor. Perhaps there may be a lengthening of your prosperity." All this came upon Nebuchadnezzar. Now, for 12 months, he was good. He realized he was walking on thin ice. But then in verse 29, at the end of 12 months, he was walking about the royal palace of Babylon. And the king spoke, saying, "Is this not great Babylon that I have built for a royal dwelling by my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty?" While the words were still in the king's mouth, a voice fell from heaven, "King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from you. And they shall drive you from men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make you eat grass like oxen. Seven times shall pass over you, until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, and he gives it to whom he chooses." That very hour the word was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar, and he was driven from men and ate grass like oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven, till his hair had grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. And at the end of the time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven, and my understanding returned to me, and I blessed the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever. Brethren, we can't allow ourselves to focus on what we have done or what we have accomplished. Yes, God does want us to work hard and enjoy the fruits of our labor. But we can't become so consumed with that that we forget who gave it to us. You know, just 700 years after the flood, you see what happened. They started building the Tower of Babel. Now keep in mind, Noah lived 350 years after the flood himself. So for 350 years, they had righteous Noah there to help try and guide them along the way. But man had drifted so far from God that he wanted to exalt himself above God. He wanted to reach the heavens, and he wanted to be his own God. They worked for 107 years on the tower before God had to intervene and put a stop to what they were doing. One Jewish historian that I looked up on this, and I couldn't believe how massive this building actually was that they were building, or this tower. It was the length of a football field, but it was also the width of a football field at the base. It was huge, and they were building it up as high as they could. It was a work of pride and arrogance. What does the Bible say about pride? Let's go to Proverbs chapter 16. Proverbs 16 and verse 18. Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Pride is a sin, and it is the same sin that caused Lucifer to rebel against God. The same sin that we read in Daniel about Nebuchadnezzar. How does God deal with this? Let's go to Isaiah chapter 2. Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 12. For the day of the Lord of hosts shall come upon everything pride and lofty, or proud and lofty, upon everything lifted up, and it shall be brought low. One of the other translations I looked at said, and it shall be humbled. Just like he did with King Nebuchadnezzar, he got to spend 7 years running around his kingdom as a wild man, running through the fields like with the beast of the field. So what best course of action is it for us today in developing the mind of Christ within us? And what is the thing that God has set before us of what we should choose to do? Let's go to Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 13. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God, keep his commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether it is good or evil. The problem is with what's being developed in today's society, they don't know the outcome of these things. They don't know how this is going to affect things in the future. They think they know, but there's a big moral question as to what they should and what they shouldn't do. Just like the National Institutes of Health has looked at this situation that they're doing and says, sorry guys, we don't want anything to do with this. This is not something that we can participate in. It's not something that we can support. Because when you start mixing chromosomes of humans and animals to create an endless supply of organs to be transplanted. You know, and there I have known cases where people have gotten an organ of a pig. My aunt, for example, many years ago, her valve in her heart quit working. And they did transplant a valve out of a pig and put in her heart. And she lived many years with that. That turned out to be a good thing. But when you start messing with the DNA and you start crossing things up and doing things that God never intended, they don't know what the outcome of this is going to be. Brethren, God was right. If He doesn't intervene in the end time world events, the things that man will create and the things that they'll do, you know, it's almost like if you saw the movie Jurassic World, they were taking chromosomes from this dinosaur and that dinosaur and mixing them up and creating a super dinosaur, super fierce. And they were going to sell them for money. The problem is, when you create a beast, that beast can soon get out of control. And that beast can soon run wild. And it brings across things that God never intended to be that way. We're so blessed, brethren, to be able to know what God intended for us to know. To be able to know this is how things are supposed to work. To be able to have that Spirit of God implanted within us. To where it can bind with the Spirit in man and help us to grow into a complete person. Mr. Armstrong said, without it, we're only half there. Brethren, have a wonderful rest of the Sabbath.